Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so in the last chapter we talked about the 10 tribes, the tragedy of the 10 tribes, and the idea that we always hope they'll make their way back. Partially, this was should have been a warning to the tribe of Yehuda. In other words, there was this high point when we came into the land where we served Hashem and we were loyal to Hashem and we hadn't strayed after the idol worship and the other things. And over time, the people were slowly getting away from that ideal. And the exile of the 10 tribes, which was much more powerful than Yehuda, which was just one tribe, should have been a warning. It should have been a sign that, hey, if we don't get our act together, the same thing could happen to us. But it didn't work. I mean, it slowed it down a little bit, but eventually even the tribe of Yehuda slid into that format of idolatry. There were a few great leaders in Yehuda, and this is really the form of David HaMelech, of the kings that broke the pattern. They brought the people back to Hashem. We started talking about him in chapter 18, about Hizkiyahu. He was a survivor. He was the survivor of the fire. His father had had him put through fire as a baby, and his mother had stuck and bathed him in salamander oil so that he wasn't burned, and he survived that ordeal. And the rest of his life, he went on a campaign to stop idol worship and the wickedness of that kind of life. There are many people that have faced great difficulties or challenges, and sometimes they, because of that, they go on a campaign to make sure that it doesn't happen to anyone else. Some mothers against drunk driving, and people that face different illnesses and things, and the and that's a Jewish response. That's Hizkiyahu. You know, he was almost killed by idolatry, and he felt he could see that that was the wrong way to go. Beyond that, also, we talked about him being a maverick, or he was willing to do things that were unusual that no one else had been willing to do. And sometimes you have to be that way. You have to be willing to do things that no one else had done. One of the things that he had done, we mentioned that at his father's funeral, he wanted to show that his father had done the wrong things. It says that he dragged the body into the cemetery instead of in a respectful way, because what his father had done was had really brought the idols in and had brought the murder in and had really been a very evil and wicked king. Usually people are willing to fight evil, but not when it's their own family. He was willing to fight evil no matter where it was. Hizkiyahu, the son of Achaz, became king in Yehuda. He started at age 25. 29 years, Malchus Yerushalayim, and he was king in Yerushalayim. And we give the credit not to his wicked father, of course, but to his mother, Vishenimo, Avi Bas Zechariyahu. I thought it was interesting that her name was Avi. That's usually a boy's name, like Abi or Avi. Avi, Abigail maybe, Avi. Abi. I don't know if any, there are any women that use Abby, okay. Three, Vayasa Yarsha B'nei Hashem, and he did what was straight and good in the eyes of the Almighty. He called Asher Asa David Avi. And he was almost equal to David in his own way. Verse 4, he was willing to break down the idols. Who Hatzer Es Abamos, he broke down the altars. V'shiber Es Hametzavos, he broke the statues. The Koris Es Asher, he cut down the trees. They were into the trees. We talked about that. The pagans always had their trees. The Kitas, and that was one of the reasons the Christians brought the tree in, because they wanted to appeal to the pagans, and the tree was very much an important part of their ritual, so they said, no problem, we'll put it in our ritual. Now you can join us. And that's how they won over the Romans. But and that's one of the reasons that we, whenever we hear about a Hanukkah tree or something, we were like, it's just so trace, you know. It sounds very harmless. It's a tree is a beautiful thing, but it just reminds us of the idols. It reminds us of the ancient trees that they had. We have enough. You know, what's wrong with the lulos? You know, if you want a tree, you know, shake the lulo. What do you got to imitate the pagans for? You know, but he cut down those trees. Now, there were certain things that were Jewish idols, so to speak, and one of them was the copper stick copper serpent that had come from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe some of you might know in doctor's offices they have it, because it said when they made this copper serpent, people who saw it were healed. The people, and so the doctors that want to heal people, somehow they pick that symbol. I don't know whose idea it was, but a lot of doctors will see they'll have that copper serpent. And in the beginning, people realized that it represented the idea that, you know, a snake represents sin, and if you turn towards the Almighty, then he'll heal you. And it's basically, we live in a perfect world, and in the Garden of Eden. And because we followed the snake and because we corrupted ourselves, that's why we have trouble. We have trouble because of our mistakes. And when we look up to Hashem, we can overcome the snake. We can overcome that. But after a while, the people lived in a world where people believed in all kinds of different gods, and they started worshiping the snake god. But we had earlier righteous kings. They were reluctant to do anything because this was something passed down from Moshe. Now, we have very little from Moshe Rabbeinu himself. This was the handiwork of Moshe. And even the righteous kings were afraid to touch it. But he said he was willing to challenge that. And he broke the copper snake, Asherasa Moshe. Now, there's another tradition, too, very interesting, that his great-grandfather, Shlomo, had written a medical book that had the medicine for all the ailments that they knew at that time. Shlomo was the wisest of all men. And they never had real medical issues because they had this book. It says he hid away the book. Yeah, I wish we could. So it's a famous question, like, why would he have done that? What was his purpose in that? And some people say that he felt that people wouldn't pray when they got sick. They would just—they never worried about illness. They would just go and consult a book. And he felt that when we feel that we can solve all our problems and we don't need anybody else, when mankind feels that they don't need God, so to speak, just let us do our own thing. If we get sick, we just consult a book. That we do more harm to ourselves. When we realize that God is the one that gives us our health, and he's the one who we have to ask if we need it. And so, according to many people, that's the reason he hid away the book. Other people say maybe he didn't hide it away. It's not so clear what the reasons were. We just have the tradition that Hizkiyahu broke Moshe Rabbeinu's stick, and he hid away Shlomo's book. But he saw in his society that they weren't good, and there were no exceptions. In other words, he was willing to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu. He was really willing to challenge his own grandfather, Shlomo. If that was, if these things were a negative thing, sometimes when a person wants to, change something, he has to go wherever it leads. He has to be willing to. He wanted to take the Jewish people away from idol worship, and so wherever that would lead, that's what he was going to do. And so he got rid of the stick of Moshe, and. What was the problem with the stick of Moshe? Abinasra Makachal, people were offering incense to it. And they even had a name for it. They called it Nehushtan. They made up a religion, or they made up a name for the idol. Five. Now, it's a dangerous thing when you challenge beliefs that people have, and people don't necessarily like someone coming in. V'Hashem Elokei Yisrael Bata. He had faith, his faith. He was a person of great faith. And we're going to see he needed it because the enemies attacked. But he was a great king because he had faith in God. Verse, V'Achrav Lo Hayu Kamohu. And after him, they broke the mold. We never had somebody like him. Interesting thing to say. V'Achrav Lo Hayu Kamohu. B'Kol Malchi Yehuda Moshe Ha'ilufanov. It's almost like there was nobody before or after who could match him. He was just, he had this great faith, and he clung to that faith, and he did whatever direction that led. Verse 6, Vayidbach Hashem, and he clung to Hashem. This idea that sometimes it's hard to have faith, sometimes not sometimes, all the time, but sometimes, in other words, there are times when our faith is challenged. We see something that we don't know how to explain. And then you got to cling to Hashem. You got to cling to it. Otherwise, if you could get, there are many people that have lost their faith, right? So he clung to Hashem. In Hebrew, the word for glue is devek. That's how he was like stuck to Hashem. Losor me'achurav. And there's some people, they cling to Hashem, but they make a little detour here and there. He didn't make any detours. He knew what he wanted, and he stuck to it. Vayishmer mitzvosav, and he guarded to keep the mitzvahs. Asher tziva Hashem et Moshe, that Hashem commanded Moshe. And there are many people that question how observant ancient Israel was, or did they? In other words, they kind of there's a theory that the you don't find that much discussion in Tanakh about the mitzvahs. What happened was that when the Reform movement started, they got away from mitzvahs initially. Now they come back to some, depending on what they're in the mood for. But the initial Reform movement was that we like the ethics of Judaism, but we don't necessarily like the mitzvahs. And the only problem with that is that's not Judaism. Judaism always had commandments. You can't say, well, love your neighbor, you know, help the poor, help the widow, help the orphan. This thing about Shabbos, this thing about Kashrus, this thing about, I don't know any of that stuff. That's not Judaism. Judaism is that it's a package. It's two tablets. There's between man and man and between man and God. You can't do one without the other. But the Reform movement really sought to do that initially, which was to say, well, I don't know about Kashrus. I kind of like the country club. I like the lobster. I don't know about Shabbos. I got, you know, a job, whatever. The golf course, the mall. I'll be a good person. I'll be a good Jew in the heart. That's enough. But the problem was that wasn't Judaism. So what they wanted to do was find a time in Judaism where maybe that was acceptable or that happened. And they would point to the prophets. That the prophets always mention how the people have to be a good Jew in the heart and care for the poor and the orphan and the widow they always talk about there's not as much emphasis about Shabbos and Kashrus and the mitzvahs of the Torah, and that was the way the theory went. The only thing is, the reason why the prophets didn't have to talk about Shabbos and Kashrus and those other things, because people, Jews always kept them. Up until the 1850s, there was no such thing as a Jew that ate pork. There was no such thing as a Jew that worked on Saturday. It just wasn't done. It was not even, so the prophets didn't get up there and say, you're not keeping the Shabbos, you're not eating. They said, you're not treating your servants right. You're not taking care of the widow and the poor. You're not doing, you know, the truth is, even with that, if you look in the books of the prophets and you look at the books of the time, it does emphasize the keeping the laws of Moses. And that's what it says right here. It says the Chizkiyahu kept the mitzvahs. Which mitzvahs? The mitzvahs that God commanded Moshe. Well, how would he know the mitzvahs that God commanded? Because they kept the mitzvahs that God commanded Moshe. It wasn't like something that the rabbis like reinvented and pulled it out of a hat at some point and said, oh, we like, you know, it was just always done. And so, but if you look, you'll see that it's in the prophets and it's in the regular book. And today they don't really see a need to even prove that. In other words, when they first invented Reform, they wanted to show it was authentic. Now that they've done it, they no longer have that need to try to say, well, they're a little more honest about the, you know, what they call prophetic Judaism. But the only point I want to make is that even in the books which talk about, you know, the idol worship and the other things, they definitely talk about following the laws of Moses. And it talks about the Shabbos, and it talks about the Kashrus. And maybe wasn't the issue that they were having. They weren't complaining that the people were eating lobster, and they weren't complaining that the people were violating the Shabbos for the most part. But it definitely talked about them following the laws of Moses. And if you look through the books of Tanakh, you always find that. You just have to be familiar with it. And so, but here it emphasizes that he followed all the laws that were handed down from the time of Moshe. They had never been lost, and they were handed down from one generation to the next. This was several hundred years later, and that's what he did. Verse 7, and I just want to point out, this was not something that was like reinvented later by the rabbis who kind of had this story about Moshe in the desert, and they, you know, this was always the way the Jewish people were, the laws of Moshe. Verse 7, now, in those things he did a lot of controversial things. Verse 7, but Hashem was with him, and whatever he did, Yaakov, he was successful. Whatever, he was he had God on his side. He clung to Hashem, he had faith in Hashem, and Hashem was with him. Now, one of the things he did was he decided he didn't want to pay taxes to the king of Asher anymore. Very dangerous thing to decide you don't want to pay your taxes to the big army, the superpower. But Hashem was with him, and he felt that people can use their own money. They don't need to send all of it to the idolatrous nation of Asher. So, there's an idea that when we're doing what we're supposed to, we won't have to worry about pay these tributes to these foreign nations. So, v'yimrod b'melech Asher. So he rebelled. V'lo avadu. It is interesting. They discuss this in Tanakh that we weren't a good vassal, meaning that the Jewish people never was good at being subservient to the ancient nations. And they kind of wonder that, like, we were pretty smart, you know, Jews were always smart, but sometimes it wasn't so smart to rebel against the Romans, or to rebel against the ancient nations, because they didn't take too kindly to having these little nations that were upstarts with them. And so they question, why was it? Is there something about Jews that they have this independent streak, that they are unwilling to be ruled by these other nations? Or was it... was it because they understood that Hashem would protect them if they were doing the right thing, or what? In other words, why, you know, in our history we had trouble from these big nations because we were unwilling to just follow and do what they did, and they. It's just an interesting question. In other words, why do they?
Even today, for instance. You go to England and you're granted an audience with the Queen. Unless you're a British subject, you don't bow down to the Queen, and Jews don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain British subjects who will do it because they are British subjects.
Mm-hmm.
There are Jews who are granted an audience with the Pope, and they will only go so far as to what they do before within that audience because we just don't do it. That's all there is.
That's right.
It's not in our DNA or our RNA or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
This is who we are. This
right.
is who we've always been.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right.
I really think that is it. You know, that we've always been that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, of course. You know, there's no such thing as everyone.
Mm-hmm.
As a nation.
Right, and in the times of the Neo, where everybody would bow down or get thrown into the furnace, or everybody would, we feel that Hashem is God. That humans are not God. We don't want to bow down to humans. We have as nice as they may be, or as much trouble as it'll get us into, we have a hard time serving human masters. So.
What? It's weird to me that people still bow down.
I think Obama bows down to people. Out of courtesy, I guess.
As I say, you know, if you're a British subject, that's one thing. Mm. But other than that, or if you're a Catholic, you know, that's another thing. But otherwise, we just don't do it. That's all there is to it.
Right, that's right. Verse 8. Now, not only did he not pay the tribute to Asher, he took care of the terrorists. He got rid of them. He got rid of the Palestinians once and for all. Who he cast up least in. You know, imagine if we had that. That's right. He just got rid of them. Verse 9. And it was in the fourth year of Chizkiyahu. It was pretty early in his reign. Tia Shana Shviat, that was the seventh year of Hoshea ben Ela, who was the king of Israel. Ola Shalmaneser Melech Asher al Shomrim, the northern kingdom, the kingdom of the ten tribes, the Gentiles came up and made a siege there on the city of Shomrim Yitzhar Leha. So, Liokadua, and they captured it. Mixe Shalosh Shalom Bishnah Shesh Lekasir Shnath Teshel Hoshea Melech Yisrael Nilkod Shomrim. And meanwhile, in other words, when these two great Jewish kingdoms, the northern kingdom was destroyed, the Yago Melech Asher is Yisrael Ashura, and the king of Asher, he put the Jewish people into exile to Asher. Vayinochem b'chlach b'chavur nahar gozan v'arimod. These were mentioned earlier. Now, what was the reason that they went into Golus? Why did that happen? Why didn't Hashem protect them? So it says very clearly, verse 12, Ala Shelo Shamu Kol Hashem Elokeichem. They didn't listen to the voice of God. We talked about this. Interesting. It doesn't just say they didn't listen. Sometimes you can listen, but you don't listen to the voice. You don't listen to the spirit of Hashem. Like, technically, you can do a lot of things within the letter of the law, but that's not enough. You have to do in the right spirit of the law. In other words, a person can say, I didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes a person can say, technically, I'm not required to help these people or do these things. But if you listen to the voice of Hashem, you have to listen to Hashem's voice. You have to hear the voice of Hashem. But Yavu, so they didn't keep the covenant of Kol Asher Tziva Moshe. They didn't keep the covenant of Moshe, Eved Hashem. And Moshe was a servant of Hashem. They didn't listen and they didn't do. Pretty interesting, that double expression. They didn't hear, they didn't want to listen, and they didn't want to do. Some people, they don't do, but they listen. They didn't want to even listen. Below Shama, below Asus. Okay.
It's just the opposite.
Right, not seven Ishma, right. We will do, we will hear. They said, we're not doing, we're not hearing, we don't want anything to do with this. Okay, 13. Arbat, Shana, Melech Hizkiyo. And after Usher had conquered the 10 tribes in the north, and now Hizkiyo was the new upstart, and he didn't pay the tribute. So, Olu Sancheirib Melech Asher al Kol Ar Yehuda. Now, Sancheirib now comes to attack Yehuda. Habatzurit. And these were fortified cities, these Bashem, and initially he conquered quite a bit of these cities. It was a very dangerous time to have this superpower now attacking Yehuda. And the question is, the name is different. In other words, here it calls the emperor of Asher to Sancheirib, and in verse 9 it calls him Shalmaneser. So the question is, are these just, did that king die and we got a new one? Was one the king, one the general? But a lot of theories. We don't really, I don't think it's been proven so much either way exactly. There was, but they were all part of the same government. It's just the question of the emperor or the general or the this campaign was led by Sancheirib. Verse 14. The Yishlach Hizkiyahu Melech Yehuda Melech Asher Lakish Lemor. So we have a rule like war is never a good thing, and we're also not supposed to rely on miracles. We're supposed to do everything we can to avoid miracles or to do things in a natural means. If they don't work, then we have no choice but to rely on miracles. So if this superpower is upset with you, so the first thing to do would be to try to negotiate, try to work things out. So Hizkiyahu, being a righteous king, he doesn't want to just say, you know, we can attack and we can rebel against you and not have to worry. So he apologizes. He goes and he says, he says, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I guess I haven't been a good vassal, whatever, shoo, may Allah, leave us alone, and whatever taxes you want, we will pay. He says, shetitin alayh esav, you know, whatever, like, we can work this out, there's no reason to shed blood over here, let's negotiate. What would you like? What will it take you to not need to come and conquer our land? So, now, unfortunately, the anti-Semites also think alike. He did something that the Nazis, Yimach Shemo, did. Terrible, terrible thing. The Nazis, Yimach Shemo, when they would come to a city, they would get ready to set up a ghetto and to destroy the Jews of that city. And the Jews would try to negotiate. And the Nazis would say, if you give us this much money, then we will allow you to stay here. So the Jews would give them the money. And then they would go, and after they got the money, then they would go and wipe out the Jews. And that's unfortunately what happened over here. But Yosef Melech Asher al Chizkiyo Melech Yehudah, he said, okay, just give me 300 talents of gold and silver, and then we'll have a nice day. So Shalosh Meis Kipik Asher Mishloshim, just give me 300 talents of gold and silver. So Chizkiyo knew this was a lot of money, but they were dealing with life and death over here. So Yitim Chizkiyo's Kola Kesem Nitzavim, so he took all the gold and silver out of the bank. The money was stored in the temple. That was the safest place in those days. People kept their money stored there. He took all the money that was there. He took all of the king's treasuries, Otsu Beis HaMelech. Now, it still wasn't enough, and so he was forced to take the treasures from the temple. They say he cut this Chizkiyo and also say Kol Hashem. He cut off the doors. The golden door. The doors were engraved in gold. He melted them down. And he had to get the treasure. And he gave all of this tribute to the king of Asher. And the Yishak Melech Asher Tartain Vesrav Sris Vesrav Shaka. And he was hoping that this would suffice. Some people say that this question was, if he paid the tribute, so why did the king still come? Some people say he intended to come anyways. He just was going to try to exact as much tribute as he could from them. Other people say that it really wasn't as much money as he asked for. So the king took the money, and verse 17, and he sent his soldiers up to attack. Vishlach Melech Asher at Tartan, it mentions the officers he sent. He sent Tartan, this Rav Siris, this Rav Shaka, Min Lakish, Helmel Chizkiho, the Chel Chavi Yushalayim. And he sends a huge army up against Yushalayim, V'yalu, Yo Yushalayim, V'yavu, V'yamdu, V'talos, Abrech, El Yonah, and they stood up on top of the hill. They had these, like, two mountaintops where they would communicate with the enemy. You know, hello over there, you know, like, this is what the king says, like, if the people inside the city were under siege. Hashem Messiah say COVID. So, 18, the Yikra El HaMelech, and so the Syrians, they called out, and they said, we want to speak to the king. And one of the king's officers came, and he came with Shevna HaSofer. He came with the scribe. The scribe was one of the government people. Those are the people that kept the records. The Yochan Ben Asaf HaMaskir, and he also had the recorder. The announcer, Well, you could say Maskir is the one that reminds you, you know, today we got this meeting, tomorrow we got that meeting, different positions of the government. So the Gentile came and they said they wanted to talk to the king. 19. So Yomar Aleim. Now, one of the people in this party is somebody named Rav Shaka. Rav Shaka. And all we said in the previous verse that he was from Lachish. In the verse 17, and Lachish was a Jewish area, and we're going to see he spoke Hebrew. So many people feel that he was a renegade Jew that had gone over to the enemy side. There are some people even feel that this was one of Chizkiyahu's children. Like a prince or something. We don't really know. We have again. It's hard to know exactly who this fellow was. It certainly didn't feel good to have a Jew on the enemy side, and we'll see over here. Listen to what he says here, verse 19. He says, go tell your king Chizkiyahu. He doesn't even call him like the king. He says, Ko Amara Melech HaGadol. He said, you're messing with the head, you know, the head honcho over here. This is what the big king says. You're peanuts. You're like a nothing king. This is what the big king says. Ma bitachon hazeh, you talk a lot about bitachon. Now, by the way, from the way he criticized him, you see that's what he told the people. He said, oh, we have nothing to worry about. Hashem will protect us. Let's have bitachon. You know, and so here comes the Jewish renegade, and he says, what are you talking about bitachon? What are you saying? Have faith in Hashem. Verse 20. Amarti akvar sasayim eitzeg vurul milchama. Oh, you're saying words, and what you really need is that going to help you in war? Who are you relying on? Where is Kimaradity be? And you rebelled against this king? You're relying on a broken stick. In those days, they used walking sticks. It was a common, you know, even Moshe Rabbeinu had the stick. I think every now and then at Stone Mountain, that's what I think about. You know, there's always somebody that picks a stick to walk up the mountain. The staff, right? So one of the dangers, though, is if you pick for a walking stick something that's eroded a little bit and you lean on it and it snaps, it's very dangerous. So when you pick a walking stick or a staff, you have to make sure the wood is sound. There's a certain way to tell if it's sound all the way through. So he says to him, he says, you know, you're relying on this bitachon that you have, this faith. And he says, that's a broken stick. You're going to lean on this broken stick. Maybe you think that the Gentiles, the Egyptians, are going to help you. And you think that that's going to help him. It's going to make things worse. Cain, Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, the whole boat he may love. You think you can rely on Paro? There's nobody for you to rely on. So what's your plan? Why are you not? Why have you rebelled against the emperor? 22. Bekitomene Lael Hashem Elokeinu Betasu, and maybe you will say to me, Hashem, our God. In other words, he knows. He even says that Hashem is our God. He says, Halohu Asher. Listen to what he says here. He says, you know, you took away all of the people had these backyard altars where they were worshiping to Hashem, and he took them all down and said everybody has to worship together. Everybody has to worship in one temple. And he says, you know, Hashem doesn't even like you because you took away all of these, you stopped all these people from being religious in their own way. You prevented them from doing these little backyard synagogues that they had, these little backyard, you destroyed all these altars. So by the way, we do see, like, we kept talking about them before, and it wasn't clear whether these altars were for idols or they were part of their Judaism. And here you see that he even says that these altars were for Hashem. In other words, the people, what they wanted were, just like all the pagans had their own little backyard altar, they didn't feel like traveling up to Yerushalayim, to the main, you know, they wanted to do it in privacy, just have their own little backyard thing, the same way all the pagans did. But it was to Hashem. So what Rav Shuk is saying to him, Hashem's angry with you because you destroyed all these little backyard altars and sticks. You said everybody's got to come worship in your place. And so he says, not everybody, apparently not everybody felt that was the way to go. Maybe it's okay if everybody prays at home and everybody has their own little thing going. And, you know, you angered Hashem. It's like a religious argument. It's so interesting how, you know, the verse 23, Atta Harabna Ananias Melech Hashem, Etna Lelas Alpaim Susim. And he says, let's make a bet. You know, I'll give you 2,000 horses. You don't even have 2,000 riders. We can't basically do duels. You know, let's go and have a powwow. He took a lot of road. You couldn't even supply the riders. Like, what? Why would you even think that you could rebel against this king? 24. You couldn't even fight against one of our little soldiers, one of our little, and you're hoping that Egypt's going to give you enough horses and enough riders? There's no way you're going to win this war, is basically what he's saying. 25. How do you think we got this far? Hashem, your God, allowed us to come up against Yerushalayim, Lashkiso, and to destroy it. And Hashem, your God, said that we should come and do it. He was making a strong religious argument that you should give in. We should be aware that there were Jews inside the city that felt that maybe we should give in. Maybe we should give in to the king of Asher. Verse 26. Now, these other people, listen to what they said. They said, Dabernel Dach Aramisi. He said, you know, please, you're speaking in Hebrew. Maybe you should speak in Aramaic. That was the language of Aram. Kishoma Naku out. You know, this is a military powwow, and the guards that are here, they understand what you're saying. And, you know, you don't want them to hear. Don't speak to us in Jewish. they thought that this was like a real communication that he was having, and the purpose of communication was between kings to talk one to another. And so therefore they said, you know, maybe you shouldn't talk Hebrew, everybody can hear you. So, You think you're the only one I want to speak to? I want to get the people on my side. I want to get the soldiers who are on the wall. Now, he wants to describe how difficult things were for the people in the city. And he says that the people, the soldiers, they because of the siege, there was no food. So the people were forced to eat their own refuse, their own urine. Those are the people that he was trying. In other words, when the siege was going on and the people were starving, and they looked like they were overwhelmed, and they faced this overwhelming army. So Rav Shaka is saying, those are the ones I want to hear. I want them all to give up. 28. The Yamar Shaka Vikabikol Gadol, and he got up, and he called out in a loud voice, Yehudis, and he's speaking Jewish. The Yidabra V'yamar Shimu Dvar HaMelech HaGadol. Listen to the big king, Melech Asher, Kol Amar HaMelech, HaYishulachem Chizkiah. Don't pay attention to your king. Tilo Yuchul HaHaslefchem Yadav. Your king can't save you from the king of Asher. 30. And don't let Chizkiyahu tell you, have faith in Hashem. Leimor hatzu yatzu in Hashem. Don't let him say, oh, Hashem will save us. Hello to us in the ear of those beyond us. It's so funny for us to listen to because we know Hashem did save us. You know, and this is him talking, you know, the people were listening. He says, you know, where's your faith going to get you? So, you know, we are standing in history, you know, several thousand years later, and where our forefathers survived because of their faith, and they had nation after nation tried to destroy us, and they said, well, where is your faith going to get you, and what's it going to do? And we're here today. We're the only nation that's survived over time. There's no other nation, no other religion that's survived thousands of years. We're an ancient people because of our faith, and we've had these enemies who would say, oh, where's your God now? And we did survive, but we're here today, thousands of years later. It's an amazing thing when you think about it, all the what the people faced. And he said, do you think the city won't be given over to the king of Asher? Verse 31, don't listen to Chizkiyahu, call Amar Melech Asher, Asu Iti Brocha. You know what, come out and make peace with me, so alive, Ochel Ishkapno, you know, it'll be good, you'll come, and we'll give you vineyards, Ishtenethle, Shosa Ish, Mayberro, we'll give each man a fig tree, and we'll give each man a farm, which, I think it was, I think they used to promise the settlers in the United States that every person will get a certain amount of farmland, and a certain amount of mules, and they...
40 acres.
40 acres, right. When was that? That was the when they wanted them to settle in the West. We'll give you all 40 acres, and you'll... So this is what he promised. Now, by the way, he didn't promise they could stay in the land of Israel, because Sancheir, what he did was he exiled the people to different lands. Now, the fortune point out that he didn't actually promise them a better land, because Israel in that time was the best land. It was the most... in its time... It was a very fruitful land. It was a land flowing with milk and honey, and it's hard looking at it today to imagine it that way, but everybody in ancient times agreed that it was unusually fertile, and it was the fruits in the the land was unusually great. Verse 32. Ad boy lachaseth kamal eretz. You know, all you have to do is agree to switch lands. We'll take you to a land of Dagon, where you'll have wheat, the Sirosh and wine, Eretz Lechem, Kramim, and vineyards, Eretz Zayis, Yitzir, Dva. He's painting a very pretty picture. We'll give you a great land. We'll give you all the benefits. We'll give you everything you want. Melos and Musa, and the best of all, you won't die. But just don't listen to Chizkiyahu, because Chizkiyahu is saying to you, Hashem Yatzilenu, that Hashem will save you. Don't listen to that. Verse 33, so it's you. Do you think that the gods of the other nations, now this was a superpower that had wiped out many nations in that area. So, and each of those nations had their god. This over here is what we call blasphemy. He's comparing Hashem to the idols. And he's saying, did the gods of the other nations protect them? Were the other gods that the other nations worshipped, was that effective to protect them against the king of Asher? Where is this god called Hamas? The Arpad and Arpad. What happened of all these ancient nations? I think I mentioned to you in the books Archaeology Today, you can find pictures of these ancient gods, you know, these statues. We have them of these gods were all wiped out. These other gods, their gods were not successful, so why should your god be any better? Me the Kolahe Arts is the Miyak. Which guys were successful? None of these other guys worked. So why do you think your God is any better? Kiyatza Hashem Yishuai Miyad. Do you think Hashem will save you? 36. Now, to the people's benefit, they threw Shuam. Nobody answered him. They were quiet. They didn't answer him. Ki mitzvah samelechi, because the king had commanded, lo taneo, don't answer him. That's always sometimes the best thing. Don't answer back. You know, don't get in discussion with them. That's not... 37. They brought the communication to the king. They tore their clothing. When a person hears what's called like a blasphemy, or when somebody says things that, you know, like they say things about Hashem that go against their Torah, technically a person is supposed to tear their clothing when they hear such things, you know, such a... So they had torn their clothing, the Yagas Divrei Rav Shaka, and they shared those words of Rav Shaka to Hizkiyahu. And we're going to have to stop right here before we find out what happened. But we're here today. We know what happened. But it's just interesting, the, you know, Hizkiyahu, with all the good things he did, he faced great challenges in his lifetime. And his answer to everything was, it's interesting, we know from our enemy what Hizkiyahu said. Don't worry, I have faith in Hashem. Hashem will save you. That's the, if you have faith, that's the bottom line.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.